Hello, good afternoon. Back on track, be welcome. Those of you who are in the room, particularly our guest speakers, warm welcome to this final track of this couple of days of hard working sessions of our joint parliamentary scrutiny group on Europol, both members of national parliaments and the European Parliament in a joint fashion that has kept us busy for the last couple of days. We are coming to an end this afternoon session with the three panelists which are already in the room. Thank you for that, Mr. Franzen, Mr. Babb, Mr. Mull. I only hope that our co-chair, Mrs. Potovan, is also connected. Are you there? Are you there to take the floor? And I will be taking the lead as to the discussion right after. There you go.
Yeah. Hvala lepa, lepo pozdravljeni tudi z moje strani. Lep pozdrav sem kolegicam, kolegom, spoštovanim govorcem. Prehajamo na tematiko obravnavanja finančnega kriminala in korupcije, zaščita finančnih interesov Evropske unije. Zadnjih 18 mesecev sta zaznamovala pandemija COVID-19 in njene posledice. Ustanove Evropske unije so se odzvale z izjemnimi zavezami na področju finančne in gospodarske politike. Sprejele so namreč sveženj v večini kar 1,8 bilijona evrov za obnovo Evrope po pandemiji. Zaščita finančnih interesov Evropske unije pri porabi teh sredstev bo ključnega pomena za doseganje ambicioznih ciljev tega zgodovinskega proračuna. Ključno vlogo v tem procesu bo imelo tudi Evropsko javno tožilstvo, ki je uradno začelo delovati junija letos. V širšem gospodarskem smislu primeri pranja denarja, prevar in goljufi še naprej ogrožajo rast in neoporečnost naših finančnih sistemov. Organi pregona v Evropski uniji vsako leto izvedejo na stotine mednarodnih preiskav finančnega kriminala, pri čemer se številne končajo z aretacijami in razpustitvijo kriminalnih združb. Da bi se odzvali na to nenehno grožnjo, je bil Europol zadolžen za ustanovitev Evropskega centra za finančni in gospodarski kriminal. Center si bo prizadeval za odvračanje, preprečevanje in pregon storilcev kaznivih dejanj ter za odvzem nezakonito pridobljenega premoženja. V tej pomembni razpravi se veselim prispevkov naslednjih govorcev. Gospoda Burkharda Mühla, vodje Evropskega centra za finančni in gospodarski kriminal Europol, gospoda Friderika Baba, Evropskega javnega tožilca iz Evropskega javnega tožilstva in gospoda Nikolasa Fransna, svetovalca iz Ministrstva za pravosodje in varnost Nizozemska. Vse govorce še enkrat lepo pozdravljam in bi kar pričeli gospod Mühl. Hvala, da ste danes z nami. Beseda je vaša in imate 8 minut. Hvala.
Thank you, madam, for giving me the floor. Distinguished members of the European Parliament, distinguished members of national parliaments and the European Union. Thank you for the opportunity to take part in this debate dedicated to financial crime and corruption, as well as the protection of the financial interests of the Union. I will start with an overview on the financial crime threat facing the EU, with a special focus on money laundering, then Europol's response in the protection of the EU financial interests. As mentioned already, economic and financial crimes are highly complex and pose a significant threat to society, affecting millions of citizens and thousands of companies every year. These crimes undermine our economic and financial sectors, which not only can deprive the EU of economic growth and employment, but also divert resources away from our public services into the black economy. We must not be complacent to that, and less so when citizens and legitimate businesses are relying on public finances to storm the pandemic. Europol is fully committed to the protection of private and public finances and to the fight against all forms of crime. A testament to this commitment is the establishment of the European Financial and Economic Crime Centre at Europol 1 year ago to address financial and economic crime in a more concerted and targeted way and to increase the level of asset recovery. Within the center, the fight against corruption has also been strengthened thanks to the creation of a new dedicated analysis project. The fight against all forms of financial crime are of the utmost importance for the European Union. As reported in our serious and organized crime threat assessment this year, corruption is believed to be substantially underreported and represents a key vulnerability, enabling the operations of criminal networks in the EU. Fraud is rising quickly as well. New fraud typologies are related to new online tools. The use of online platforms amplifies the reach of fraud schemes and generate multi-million euro profits for the criminals and criminal networks involved. Another worrying finding is that 80% of criminal networks use legal business structures for their criminal activities, and half of the criminal networks set up their own legal business structures. This finding should, however, be no surprise, as we know that shell companies and offshore companies are used even within the European Union. The recent Pandora paper leaks, while being so far mostly centered on tax evasion and tax avoidance, serve as a reminder to us all that complex business structures are often used in money laundering schemes. The correct identification of the beneficial owners behind business transactions is an essential aspect of fighting money laundering and the recovery of criminal assets. Now to the protection of the EU financial interests. The Next Generation EU Fund is about to be distributed to the member states, and money laundering has already been identified at national level as a possible risk. Other areas where we know that EU-based organized crime groups can operate are the following: EU subsidy fraud, procurement rigging, loan and mortgage fraud, and corruption. The Next Generation EU Fund is an unprecedented effort to secure social stability and foster the financial well-being of the Union. It is therefore imperative to prevent and counter any criminal action, ensuring that the large scale of funds provided by the Union reach and fulfill respectively its intended destination and objectives. For this reason, since the adoption of the fund, Europol started working intensely to provide the best support to member states in the protection of those. Europol, together with Italy, has set up the Next Generation EU Law Enforcement Forum, which is based on the experience of the COVID-19 working group, to ensure a follow-up on the Council conclusions on the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on internal security, adopted by the Ministers for Justice and Home Affairs in June 21. The first meeting of the forum took place in September this year, with the attendance of police chiefs and senior law enforcement representatives from 23 member states, as well as senior officials from Europol, EPPO, OLAF and CEPOL. The main conclusions of the meetings were the following: prevention is imperative to ensure that the funds provided by the Union region fulfill its intended destination and objectives. Early detection is also essential, and a comprehensive and joint approach is needed, namely sharing patterns, identifying risks, outlining the criteria and the best practices to mitigate any dispersion of the recovery funds. In addition, there's a clear need for a proactive approach that guarantees an informed, organized, and systematic and EU-coordinated response to combat the expected wave of fraud against EU recovery funds. Europol will support the member states and enhance cooperation with other stakeholders, in particular EPPO and OLAF, to protect the financial interests of the European Union. As mentioned in one of the forum's conclusions, a joint response needs to be supported by all the competent authorities at national and at EU level in charge of the implementation of the funds. Thus, Europol is already working with other EU bodies to address the criminal risks posed by the Next Generation EU Fund and related criminal activities. Europol is working closely with OLAF, and in the short term, we are looking to produce in November a first report on intelligence on key issues, on risks and threat indicators for policymakers in the EU law enforcement authorities. Together with OLAF, Europol has also engaged with the Recover Task Force, supporting the task force in the definition of the risk indicators. EPPO will have a key role in prosecuting the perpetrators of criminal offences there too. Our mutual cooperation, according to the respective mandates, is advancing well, and we have the legal tools to put it into practice. The working arrangement, which entered into force in January this year, together with other further steps we are currently taking. In addition, the Europol provides a dedicated operational support via the recently established Operation Sentinel, which will enable cross-checks against Europol data, providing analytical and forensic support, organizing and funding operational meetings, and so on. I would like to highlight that Europol has already started working in this operation, and we will have this operation running initially for 1 year. To finalize, I would like to recall one of the most important initial objectives for creating EFIC, which is the need for stronger results in the field of asset recovery. Leaving criminal assets with organized crime will jeopardize our efforts in preventing and combating serious and organized crime. Europol is ready to support member states in this area, as well as in all financial and economic crime areas, including preventing and combating fraud affecting the financial interests of the Union. Thank you very much for your attention.
Milu za njegov prispevek. Med nami pa že pozdravljam gospoda Baba. Izvolite, imate besedo, 8 minut.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for having invited EPPO to this meeting on Europol. First of all, I'd like to say that I'm very happy to be here. I already had an excellent experience with Europol when I was the French national member at Eurojust, especially in the field of terrorism. We had an excellent cooperation, and I remember that already in 2016, Europol had set up the Counterterrorism European Centre. And now again, Europol has anticipated the setting up of EPPO by creating the European Financial and Economic Crime Centre. Thank you very much for this. The second point I'd like to stress in my introduction is that as you said, Madam Chair, with the new multi-annual financial framework and the extra recovery plan Next Generation EU, this global EU budget of 1,800 billion euros will be an opportunity for everyone, for the economic actors, but also for the fraudsters. And in these very special circumstances, EPPO arrives not only at the right moment, but I should say, right on time. So, I assume that you already know EPPO, not only the applicable decisions, but also our competence. We're competent for prosecuting all the PIF offences, the fraud against EU expenditure, but also fraud against EU revenue, especially customs duties, and VAT fraud involving a damage of at least 10 million euros. I'd like to put the focus in my intervention on three points. First of all, because this is of interest for you, to give you a first overview of the operational activity of EPPO. The second point is, of course, the cooperation with Europol. And the third point might be an issue that has been already addressed by the European Parliament, in a resolution on the liability of companies for environmental damage adopted on 20 May 2021 related to a possible extension of the competence of EPPO to environmental crime. So first point, our operational activity. What I would like to stress first is that it functions with its 15 permanent chambers and its 140 delegated prosecutors. EPPO functions very well. There were some doubts in the beginning because the organization appeared to be complex, but in fact, it is a very simple and smooth functioning. The decision, the important decisions in the cases are taken by the central level, by the permanent chambers, and the decentralized level, the European delegated prosecutors, they conduct the investigation under the supervision of a European prosecutor. Another point which is very interesting also for you is to know that the judicial cooperation is very simple. That's amazing, because we don't need the EU instruments anymore. We don't need the European investigation order. We can simply assign a measure to another EDP and the request is immediately executed. To give you one or two figures, between June and October, EPPO has received 2,166 crime reports. Half of it were transmitted by national authorities, nearly the other half from private parties, and 8% from IBOAs, and among those IBOAs, 7% from the OLAF. We have registered for verification 1,200 cases, and we have opened, in the end, after the verification, 384 cases. So this shows that already we have started our activity with a strong relationship with the national authorities. 80% of the cases that we are dealing with are coming from those national authorities. Second point, cooperation with Europol. We have signed a working arrangement with you in January 2021, which deals with the exchange of information between EPPO and Europol. And we're very happy of this, because we do think that Europol is really an extraordinary instrument, not only for the collecting of information, but also for the cross-check of information and the criminal analysis. So the exchange of information between both bodies has not started yet because of IT problems related to Siena connection, but very soon we will start, I think, a very fruitful cooperation with Europol. You have mentioned EPPO in your operation plan Sentinel, which is an excellent idea, of course. My only regret is that there is only one sentence on EPPO. It's not enough. The next time I'd like to see a whole page on EPPO, because this is our core business. This is the competence of EPPO. Let me give you one example that you have already mentioned, the Pandora Papers, with a resolution of the European Parliament in the last days, 21st October, on the Pandora Papers, and point 12, the European Parliament calls on EPPO to have a look at it, and we will have a look at it with you, Europol. Last point. This resolution already made by the European Parliament on 20 May 21, point 33, calls on the Commission to explore the possibility of extending the mandate of EPPO once it is fully established and fully functional to cover environmental crime. My personal opinion is that this is an excellent proposal, an excellent idea, although there is no common position of the College of EPP on this issue. It would be indeed a very logical and natural evolution. EPP is already dealing with PIF offences related to the Green Deal, and you know it much better than me that the Green Deal is already one third of the EU budget. The other point, and this is the reason why I address this issue today, we all know the links between environmental crime and the organised crime and economic crime. For example, the trafficking in waste and the money laundering behind this. So for this reason, and also because the timing would be ideal as it could be combined with the Commission's proposal to revise the Directive 2008/99 on the protection of the environment through criminal law, I really do think that this proposal already made by the European Parliament should be supported. Thank you very much.
Zahvaljujem se gospodu Frederiku Babi, Evropskemu javnemu tožilcu za predstavitev dela Evropskega javnega tožilca in seveda tudi za pogled s te strani na obravnavano problematiko. Sedaj pa nadaljujemo z našimi predstavitvami in predlagam in dajem besedo gospodu Nikolasu Fransnu, svetovalcu Ministrstva za pravosodje in varnost iz Nizozemske. Ravno tako imate na razpolago 8 minut. Hvala.
Thank you, Chair and Madam Chair, for inviting me to this interesting occasion. I would like to start perhaps with a quote, and the quote is as follows. The EU budget can be characterized as a subsidy budget, and according to criminological investigations, subsidies are highly criminogenic financial instrument and very subject to criminal behavior. It's important to bear this in mind. The whole system of EU subsidies is difficult to manage, and the system thus has a criminogenic effect. In other words, it will lead to crime. We can be certain about that. Now, intriguingly, the Commission's annual report on the protection of the financial interests of the EU, which was published on the 6th of October this year, seems to point to a downward trend of detected fraud. We don't know if the fraud has actually gone down or whether the number of potential cases of fraud that has been reported has decreased, but it's intriguing, to say the very least. At the same time, however, in my view anyway, the risk of fraud at the expense of the EU budget is probably more imminent than ever in light of the staggering amounts of money that will become available on top of the regular EU budget under the RRF. We're talking a breathtaking 672.5 billion. I'm not alone on this, on expressing this fear or risk. Europol, the European Court of Auditors, Olaf, and journalists in various countries where the risk of EU fraud tends to be high have all warned against the considerable risk of EU fraud under the RRF. And the available experience with national economic support packages during the pandemic points to the same phenomenon. The United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime has equally reported similar findings. And it's for that reason very appropriate that the Serious Organized Crime Threat Assessment 2021 should mention the risk of fraud under the circumstances. I think Mr. Mull already referred to that. Or in the words of the President of the European Court of Auditors, the faster the money flows, the higher the risks. So this is a reality. Now, knowing all this in advance, how will we effectively tackle instances of EU fraud once the financial means are basically up for grabs? The EU's most relevant actors, Olaf, Eurojust, Europol and the EPPO, of course, will obviously all need to play their role, ideally in close cooperation, in respect of their mandates and in, as the EU speak, the buzzword in EU speak goes, full complementarity, which means they don't do the same thing. There is no overlap between them. Fair enough, but I would immediately warn against overestimating the impact that they may have at the end of the whole law enforcement chain. Certainly, their role is vital for smoothening cross-border cooperation, and in the case of the EPPO, for enhancing the mere sense of urgency, of priority, of tackling fraud through the criminal justice system. That said, however, one should bear in mind that the criminal justice system is meant to be an ultimate remedy, not a panacea for all forms of fraud. It is complex, it is time-consuming, it's costly, and even if we manage to get to the stage of persecution and finally conviction of a suspect, which would usually take many years, vast experience in this field tells us that recovering illegal gains is extremely challenging, to say the very least. One should therefore take statements by some high-ranking EU officials like, "We will ensure that every single euro will be well spent," or alternatively, "It will be fully recovered if it wasn't," with a pinch of salt, a spoon even, perhaps. And last but not least, let's keep in mind here that in relation to many forms of criminality, prevention has proven to be far more effective in practice than its cure in the form of criminal justice. I would therefore very much agree with Mr. Muhl on the importance of prevention and early detection. How then might we optimize the role OLAF, Europol, Eurojust, and the EPPO have in fighting EU fraud? Excuse me. First and foremost, we need to ensure that our own house is in order before they come into the picture and fulfill their specific role. If we do not, we are likely to leave them in a position, to use a metaphor in Dutch, of mopping the floor while the tap is still running. That, in general, has very little point and is at best symbolic. In other words, we need to seek to adopt legislation that is as much fraud-proof as we were able to envisage at the time when we adopted it. We need to have administrative procedures, checks, and audit mechanisms in place to ensure that EU subsidies are used for the right purpose. The national recovery plans under the RRF need to contain credible measures to prevent, if need be, detect and administratively deal with irregularities or even potential fraud at a very early stage. National authorities need to keep a close eye on the correct spending of EU money, ideally on the basis of a national anti-fraud strategy. And they need to effectively address any wrongdoings as soon as possible. And, of course, provided the criteria are met, inform OLAF or even the EPPO if all of that fails to achieve its purpose. And it goes without saying that they should support the EPPO or OLAF, as the case may be, in their operation and work, including by providing administrative support to the European delegated prosecutors who represent the EPPO within the member states who participate in the EPPO. By means of a conclusion, perhaps, the various actors at the EU level who form its anti-fraud architecture, such as the EPPO or Europol and its European Financial and Economic Crime Centre, will undoubtedly contribute to a more effective response on the EU side in countering the risks of EU fraud in the coming years. That risk has to be assessed as very real just by looking at the sheer size of the RRF. And to that end, the budgetary authority should ensure adequate financial resources for each of these actors so as to allow them to do their job. At the same time, the activities of these organizations will have most impact if the underlying administrative structure for the management of the various EU funds is solid enough to allow the actors competent for criminal investigation or even prosecution to focus their limited capacity on the most serious and cross-border cases of crime, even organized crime. Excuse me. National authorities will need to assist them in line with the existing legal EU framework, among others, by nominating delegated prosecutors and by providing them with timely information and structural assistance. OLAF, Europol, Eurojust, and the EPPO in turn should all cooperate closely and streamline their activities in order to avoid overlap or even mutual competition. not only by concluding working arrangements, as they have, but in their day-to-day practice. On that last point, finally, I was happy to note that the European Parliament, in point 40 of its resolution of the 10th of June this year, on the views of the Parliament on the ongoing assessment by the Commission and the Council of the National Recovery and Resilience Plans, underlines the following. Firstly, that the success of the RRF and of the National Recovery and Resilience Plans requires robust transparency and accountability from the Commission, the Member States, and implementing partners. And secondly, that it calls on the Commission to increase the resources of the European Court of Auditors, OLAF, and the EPPO to ensure that they have sufficient financial and human resources to scrutinize the unprecedented amount of EU expenditure. I personally could not agree more, and rest assured that I would not say so if I didn't. My friend Frederik will immediately testify that I always speak the truth, being Dutch. Thank you very much for bearing with me.
I do testify.
Gospod Franzen, tudi vam hvala za vašo predstavitev. Sedaj pa predajam besedo sopredsedujočemu gospodu Lopez Aguilaru, da vodi razpravo. Izvolite.
Thank you again, dear chair, Mrs. Potočan. Now I will open up the discussion, getting started with the one who is in the room. It's Mr. Ralph Zierats. There you go. You got the floor. European Parliament.
Ja, vielen Dank. Vielen Dank, Herr Vorsitzender. Meine Herren, vielen Dank für die Ausführung. Finanzstraftaten und Korruption gefährden ja nicht nur unser Finanzsystem, sondern den gesamten Rechtsstaat. Um Erträge aus den illegalen Aktivitäten zu waschen, haben die organisierten Kriminellen ja leider schon ein paralleles Finanzsystem aufbauen können. Zwei Drittel der kriminellen Netzwerke sind auch an Korruption beteiligt. Der Einsatz von Korruption und der Missbrauch legaler Geschäftsbeziehungen ist ein zentrales Merkmal der schweren organisierten Kriminalität in Europa. Dadurch wird unser Rechtsstaat strukturell untergraben. Derzeit kratzen wir aber leider nur an der Oberfläche. Die Schäden für die Staatskassen sind enorm. Um organisierte Kriminalität in Europa wirksam und auch nachhaltig bekämpfen zu können, müssen wir die kriminellen Netzwerke dauerhaft die entsprechenden Einnahmequellen entziehen. Die Arbeit der Strafverfolgungsbehörden ist sehr wichtig und da ist auch schon einiges passiert, aber das ist nicht alles. Unsere Aufgabe ist es vor allem durch die nötigen rechtlichen Voraussetzungen, die Möglichkeiten der organisierten Kriminalität zur Geldwäsche zu verhindern. Die europäischen Regeln waren bis dahin leider nur ein Flickenteppich. Es gab kein einheitliches europäisches Vorgehen. Das hatten wir auch in der letzten Plenardebatte schon angesprochen. Die Mitgliedstaaten haben die Richtlinien teilweise nur nachlässig oder überhaupt nicht umgesetzt. Und so konnten wir das Problem auch nicht in den Griff bekommen. Deshalb begrüße ich es sehr, dass die Kommission einen ambitionierten Verordnungsvorschlag vorgelegt hat. Wir brauchen einheitliche europäische Regeln und auch Standards, um die existierenden Schlupflöcher auch endlich schließen zu können. Ein entscheidendes Puzzlestück ist nach unserer Ansicht nach die neue Anti-Geldwäsche-Behörde. Hier wird es auch darauf ankommen, wie gut die Vernetzung mit Europol und auch mit der Europäischen Staatsanwaltschaft dann funktioniert. Daher meine Frage an beide, wie sehen Sie Ihre Rolle bei dem Geldwäschepaket? Was sind Ihre Anforderungen auch an diese neu zu schaffende Geldwäschebehörde? Und eine zweite Frage möchte ich anschließen zu den Pandora Papers. Inwieweit waren Sie insgesamt bei den Ermittlungen eingebunden? Unterstützen Sie diese entsprechend? Hierzu hätte ich auch gern eine kurze Ausführung. Vielen Dank.
Vielen Dank, Herr Zierats. Adesso la parola all'onorevole Valentina Cornelli della Camera Italiana dei Deputati. Onorevole Cornelli.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can.
Okay. Speaking English, dear colleagues, the keywords for the future are prevention and coordination. The aim of prevention is to arrive before the economy is compromised through the identification of these signals that allow the early detection of attempts at corruption, money laundering, and other financial crimes. Coordination, on the other hand, is necessary for the continuous exchange of information and the continuous comparison between all the realities that fight against the criminal phenomenon. Here in Italy, we have the Counter-Terrorism Strategic Analysis Committee, which provides for the involvement of all the police and the intelligence forces. And Claudio Galzarano, our Claudio Galzarano, is the new head of EU Counter-Terrorism. Italy also coordinated the Law Enforcement Forum, the working group working against the risk of criminal infiltration by mafia, in the management of 750 billion euro for the post-COVID restart. It's necessary a single EU code on anti-money laundering and countering terrorist financing and tracking of crypto assets transfer too, because in a so complex and articulated system like the one we live in, organized crime identifies equally and complex strategies to make a profit. So to break down these organizations require daily commitment, study, exchange of information, and the ability to anticipate. I'm sure that the precondition for achievement of the goal is that no one run alone. So I want to know about the Pandora Papers too, if we have news. Thank you.
Now it's Peter Bidanov. European Parliament, are you connected? Mr. Bidanov?
Yes, I am.
Yes, you are.
Sure. Okay, perfect, perfect. Thanks a lot. Now, I think we all agree that criminals make sell launder billions of euros annually. And the scale and complexity of money laundering activities in the EU have been previously underestimated. Professional money launderers have established parallel underground financial system and use any means to infiltrate and undermine Europe's societies and economies. One of the key problems to me is that the fight against the corruption remains primarily at the national level and remains a national competence. In fact, there is not even a single definition of corruption in the European Union, although the EU treaty recognizes it as a Eurocrime for its cross-border implications. And yet, each year, corruption is estimated to cost the European Union up to 6.3% of its GDP. And in my countries, for instance, 11 billion. And according to a Eurobarometer survey published in June 2020, 71% of the Europeans believe that corruption is widespread in their country, and 42% thinks that it has increased in the recent years. And of course, corruption cannot be only a national problem. Across the EU, given especially having in mind how our economies are linked, we also have to take into consideration that very often we are talking about EU money, EU taxpayers' money, so we have an obligation to them. One observation I would like to make, especially in regard to the use of the European money, or maybe I should say the misuse of the EU funds, is that very often on paper things look good, papers are in order administratively, all the procedures have been followed. But in reality, however, we can see with our own eyes that money has been wasted. The awarding of the contracts in public procurement is oftentimes flawed, which is really what corruption consists of. And so my question would be, what actions is Europol undertaking in order to address this serious issue? How can we as legislators help you do a better job? And could you also provide some details or insight of the working arrangement that Europol's site with the EPPO, and what your expectations for these cooperations are in terms of fighting corruption? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bidanov. Now it'll go to Elias Miriantous, Cyprus, House of Representatives. If you're connected, the floor is yours.
Elias, please press the speak button. Thank you.
Miriantous?
Yes.
Yes, now we hear you, but we don't see you.
Yeah.
You need to speak. but also to be seen. So please press this, the screen button, if you may. There has to be some screen button, a mic button to speak, to be heard, but also some screen button so that we can see you.
I don't see you here.
We will refresh your connection.
Okay, you're going to be reset, okay, to be refreshed. But I'll move on. We'll be back to you soon.
Okay, thank you.
If we may, we move on to Gwendolyn Delbos Corfield, European Parliament. Are you there, Gwendolyn? Connected? Nope.
Hello?
Yes.
I am.
Yes, you are. Yes. You are there. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Hello. Thanks to the speakers. Sometimes here we have very theoretical, institutional blah blah that sometimes it's not that easy to relate to. I think today we have had really operational and also concrete remarks, and we see that this is something where we all have big concerns. And despite the fact that these were three gentlemen that were speaking, and I would just alert everyone on the fact that we could have a bit more gender-balanced speakers in the first hearings, I really appreciated the three interventions, the three speaking moments. And I wanted to specifically say that we share the same concern as the Minister of Justice of Netherlands, and that indeed the recovery new plans are even more of concern because it's new money flowing in indeed, and it's also at a time where we have not got a number of answers in this House as Member of Parliament on a number of money use of the European money, that no explanation on some of the lost European money. So at the same time, we've got money and we have not all the guarantees, the safeguards, and we need these safeguards, and we've been insisting on it in this Parliament. And I hope that we can give means to these institutions so that we can go forward on this. The 2021 Rule of Law report did highlight all these concerns in several member states, and the fight is a long way in front of us. The European semester country-specific recommendations has been done towards 11 member states, and now we do not still not have this conditionality regulation in place. We've voted it. We're waiting for a decision from the Commission, and these resilience and recovery facility are there. One member state I work a lot on, but number of my colleagues here do too, is Hungary. Hungary has been really found by Olaf as the state where there is the highest number of irregularities when it comes to the use of EU funds between 2015 and 2019. And at the same time, Hungary is not participating in EPPO. So what is the state of play of the discussions with Hungary, and how can we work on Hungary despite these challenges? And to Europol and EPPO, how are you planning to scrutinize the use of prepayments made under the Resilience and Recovery Facility? We have huge concerns there, and we really want you to cooperate. So I was a bit worried when I heard that this cooperation was not maybe going so well. I would really ask Europol to really cooperate with EPPO, and I would also ask EPPO to maybe elaborate a bit more on the human resources they would need. The Minister of Justice of Netherlands pointed out the fact that we needed people to work on this, and we didn't get this in last budget, but I really strongly advise everyone to put a bigger budget to EPPO so that you have better people, more people working on all of this. Thank you.
Thank you, Gwendolyn. I'm compelled to remind you that the estimated time of every speaker should be around 2 minutes, no more than that, because this morning we exceeded our timing. We were in trouble with the interpretation cabin at the end of the morning session. It shouldn't happen this afternoon, which is the final track. So let's try to make it concise, okay? Let's see if Elias Miriantus has been reset or refreshed. Have you?
Ευχαριστώ, κύριε Πρόεδρε.
Yes, you have.
Κύριε Πρόεδρε, κυρίες και κύριοι συνάδελφοι, καλό απόγευμα. Είναι γεγονός ότι η διαφθορά αποτελεί ένα ιδιαίτερα σοβαρό έγκλημα με διασυνοριακή διάσταση και δεν επιβαρύνει απλώς την οικονομία της Ευρωπαϊκής Ένωσης, αλλά υπονεμεύει επίσης τη δημοκρατία και το κράτος δικαίου σε ολόκληρη την Ευρωπαϊκή Ένωση. Σύμφωνα με την επικεφαλής της Europol, κυρία Κατρίν Ντεμπόρ, οι επιπτώσεις από την πανδημία αποδυνάμωσαν την οικονομία της Ευρωπαϊκής Ένωσης και δημιούργησαν νέα κενά ασφάλειας από τα οποία μπορεί να αναδυθεί το έγκλημα. Για τον λόγο αυτό, πέρσι δήλωσε ότι ιδρύθηκε το Ευρωπαϊκό Κέντρο για το Χρηματοπιστωτικό και Οικονομικό Έγκλημα της Europol με στόχο την καταπολέμηση του ξεπλύματος βρώμικου χρήματος, της απάτης, της διαφθοράς που συνήθως αυξάνονται σε καιρούς οικονομικής κρίσης. Επιπρόσθετα, πέραν των γνωστών κινδύνων, αναδύονται νέες ψηφιακές προκλήσεις, οι οποίες σχετίζονται με νέους τρόπους διαχείρισης και διάθεσης κονδυλιών της Ευρωπαϊκής Ένωσης, που συνδέονται με τις επιδόσεις και την επίτευξη συγκεκριμένων στόχων και τομείς ενισχυμένων δαπανών, όπως η πράσινη και ψηφιακή μετάβαση. Αν και πάρθηκαν μέτρα προς τη σωστή κατεύθυνση από την πλευρά της Ευρωπαϊκής Ένωσης, για την αποτελεσματική αντιμετώπιση των κινδύνων αυτών χρειάζονται επίσης νέες προσεγγίσεις και νέα εργαλεία, ένα ανανεωμένο και κοινό ευρωπαϊκό όραμα για την καταπολέμηση της απάτης, της διαφθοράς και άλλων παράνομων δραστηριοτήτων που θίγουν τα οικονομικά συμφέροντα της Ένωσης. Ειδικότερα, επιβάλλεται αποτελεσματικότερη συλλογή και χρήση δεδομένων, βελτιωμένη διαφάνεια, καλύτερες συντονισμένες και συνεκτικές προσπάθειες των κρατών μελών, μέσων αλλά και ανάπτυξης κατάλληλων ελεκτικών μηχανισμών, ενισχυμένη συνεργασία μεταξύ των κρατών μελών της Ευρωπαϊκής Ένωσης με τους θεσμούς και τις αρμόδιες υπηρεσίες της, όπως είναι η Ευρωπαϊκή Εισαγγελία, οι οποίοι πρέπει να λειτουργούν, πιστεύω, με ανεξαρτησία, μεροληψία και λογοδοσία. Αυτό αποτυπώνεται άλλωστε και σε σωρία ψηφισμάτων του Κοινοβουλίου για την πάταξη της διαφθοράς. Κλείνοντας, τα κράτη-μέλη πρέπει επίσης να λαμβάνουν σοβαρά υπόψη τις ετήσιες εκθέσεις της Κομισιόν όσο αφορά την κατάσταση του κράτους δικαίου στη χώρα τους και να προβαίνουν στην υιοθέτηση των κατάλληλων μέτρων πρόληψης και καταπολέμησης της διαφθοράς. Σας ευχαριστώ πολύ.
Ευχαριστώς. Now we move to, again, Madame Aude Bonneau-Vandomme de l'Assemblée Nationale Française. Êtes-vous là? Madame Vandomme?
Madame, appuyez sur le speak button, s'il vous plaît. Merci.
Vous prenez les boutons de l'écran et du son. No. Alors, we move on again. We will be back to you, Madame Vandomme. But let's hear now from Jacek Kurzepa. If you're connected, the floor will go to you. Polish Sejm. No, not connected. Then we move to Claire Daly. She should be connected. No, neither. Then how about Zoltán Kovács, Hungary National Assembly? Are you connected?
Jó napot kívánok mindenkinek! Ha megengedik, egy személyes dologgal kezdeném. Több mint két évtizeddel ezelőtt én voltam a magyar parlamentben az, aki a Magyarország Európai Uniós csatlakozási megelőző tárgyalásokon vittem azt a törvényt, amely az Europolhoz történő csatlakozást jelentette. Úgyhogy megtisztelő, hogy most önökkel együtt lehetek ez ügyben. A magyar jog az részletesen foglalkozik a korrupció és a pénzügyi bűnözés kérdésköreivel. Ennek megvannak az anyagi jogi vetületei a büntető törvénykönyvben, és megvannak az eljárásjogi vonatkozásai is. A nyomozati jogköre van a rendőrség mellett az ügyészségnek, és a kiemelt ügyekben ott a kizárólagos jogköre van az ügyészségnek. Meggyőződésünk, hogy ezen bűncselekmények felderítésében és a módszerekről való véleménycsere tekintetében kulcsfontosságú az Europollal történő együttműködés és a partnerhatóságokkal. Ez gyors és hatékony kapcsolat, ehhez hozzájárul egyébként a menet közbeni oktatás és képzés is. Ugye fontos kérdés, hogy a bűncselekményből származó jövedelmek és egyéb tulajdon felkutatása, ami egyébként átnyúlik a határokon az Európai Unióban is, hogy többen említették már korábban, hogy miként történjen ezeknek a felderítése. A vonatkozó tanácsi határozat nyomán az illetékes tagállami hatóságok közötti együttműködés céljából Magyarországon a készenléti rendőrség nemzeti nyomozó irodán belül 2015. március 1-én állították fel a vagyonvisszaszerzési hivatalt. A hivatal az unión belüli tevékenységének koordináció okán az Europol vagyonvisszaszerzési fókuszpontjával tart kapcsolatot, és szorosan együttműködik az Europollal, főleg ott, ahol nemzetközi jellegű az elkövetés. Mára az Europol az Európai Unió bűnügyi információs központjává nőtte ki magát, növekvő számú partnerrel és információ forrás biztosít, hozzáférés biztosít a tagállamoknak. Ez a közös bűnüldözői munka segíti az egyes tagállamok eljárásait. Hosszú út vezetett ez idáig, hiszen 1923-ban a bécsi rendőrkongresszuson ez hasonló alakult meg, még gyermekcipőben, és napjainkig folyamatos és hosszú fejlődésen ment keresztül, de azt gondolom, hogy megérte. Hát jó munkát kívánok mindenkinek.
Thank you. Now it's José Magalhães, Asamblea Nacional Portuguesa. José Magalhães.
Hello. 2 points. Firstly, let's not get overwhelmed about what this agency or this center can do. We, of course, join every positive appreciation and remark made to the work and to the presentation made by Mr. Mull and Mr. Bab. But let's not forget that we are dealing with a structure staffed by, if I'm not wrong, 65 international experts and analysts. That's basically it. So it's not gigantic. Secondly, and this is shocking, 98.9% of estimated criminal profits are not confiscated and remain at the disposal of criminals. So what can this center really do? Anyone going to the internet and taking a look at what has been summarized for us minutes ago can see that many areas are, all of the areas are relevant. There's no reference to cryptocurrency, which I don't understand. It should be there. And it certainly will be there one of these days. And my question is, how can a group of journalists, although professionals, gather information that allowed us to get the Pandora documents, and then we'll see what happens. In our country, for instance, not much happened till now. And Europol cannot outperform this, targeting with accuracy the right targets. The second and last remark is that a Portuguese hacker called Rui Pinto, all by himself, managed to unveil corruption in the football world and in the Republic of Angola, the famous Luanda Leaks, which is something that is something of a dream for structured forces such as Europol. I'm not suggesting that Europol should go into the business of hacking, but it's already in the business of decrypting and will certainly have to do what U.S. agencies are doing right now. So what's the method, how are you going to use for this purpose, artificial intelligence, and how are you going to work with national services and structures and police forces? Because we don't even have the appropriate platforms for that purpose. And in our case, there's a certain resistance to using those platforms. We still are much on the paper, and our public prosecutors are extremely proud each time they see one of those big trucks transporting the documents of a case, and they think that's the best thing of the world. In my opinion, it's a shame. I tried to change that when I was Secretary of State for modernization of justice. I failed miserably, but that's a concrete problem we face not only in Portugal, but in many other countries. So the communications, the participation circuits, the tools are essential for the success of our endeavors.
Please, I'm done. So please, if you may conclude, it'll help us.
Speaker, I did it. It's done.
Again, I didn't mean to interrupt you. You are entitled to have your say, but I was just simply suggesting that you before taking the floor, you try to phrase your mind up to maybe 2 minutes, around 2 minutes, so that we can make it. Please conclude.
No, my mind is made for 10 minutes, so don't worry.
No? You disconnected. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Magalhães. That'll do. I would suggest for the following to try and the timing. It'll be Franco Roberti, Honorable Franco Roberti del Parlamento Europeo. Se lei è in collegamento, lei ha la parola.
Grazie Presidente, buongiorno a tutti. Nei 2 minuti che mi sono concessi, pochissime osservazioni. Innanzitutto dico che il nuovo mandato di Europol, si inserisce in una strategia dell'Unione Europea.
Scusi, Onorevole Roberti, vediamo l'altro lato del suo schermo, non vediamo la sua faccia, vediamo, ecco, è la sedia, l'ufficio, ma adesso vediamo la faccia, ecco.
Vedete, vabbè, grazie.
Ecco, vado avanti.
Allora, grazie, il nuovo mandato di Europol si inserisce nella nuova strategia europea di tipo globale, economico, finanziario e digitale, strategia europea che va ad affiancarsi a quella della Nazioni Unite, che hanno recentemente rilanciato la Convenzione di Palermo contro il crimine organizzato e anche quella di Merida contro la corruzione. Al primo punto della nuova strategia globale, sia europea che delle Nazioni Unite, c'è l'agevolazione dello scambio di informazioni e un accesso tempestivo alle stesse attraverso l'ampliamento delle specifiche attribuzioni, nel nostro caso di Europol, anche nella cooperazione con i paesi terzi. L'interoperabilità delle banche dati e una nuova piattaforma dedicata allo scambio importantissimo tra investigatori e magistrati delle informazioni e delle prove elettroniche, sempre più determinanti nell'era digitale. A questi nuovi poteri si affiancano nuovi e più forti controlli di garanzia, come ricordava stamattina il collega Zazaleos, che renderanno ancora più efficace la risposta, che è tanto più efficace e credibile quanto più forti sono proprio le garanzie. Per combattere la criminalità finanziaria e la corruzione occorrerà quindi compiere ulteriori e decisivi passi nella direzione di un sistema integrato che sia in grado non solo di garantire l'effettiva implementazione del quadro legislativo esistente nei vari paesi, ma anche di realizzare il coordinamento delle attività di prevenzione e di repressione. Saranno a questo fine di fondamentale rilievo l'istituzione della nuova autorità europea antiriciclaggio, con compiti di supervisione e di un meccanismo di coordinamento che migliori l'efficacia della trasmissione delle informazioni finanziarie e consenta l'interconnessione dei registri nazionali centralizzati dei conti bancari e un tempestivo accesso trasfrontaliero alle informazioni, così come sarà anche necessario uno stretto coordinamento tra gli altri organismi, Europol, Procuratore Europeo, Eurojust, che non è stata mai ricordata finora, e Olaf. E io saluto con estremo favore l'ampliamento delle competenze dell'EPPO ai reati in materia ambientale, che sono sempre più strettamente connessi ai reati economici, ai reati finanziari e alla corruzione. Per finire, solo un sistema finanziario globale, sostenuto da un quadro giuridico armonizzato, da una cooperazione efficace e da una strenua difesa dello Stato di diritto nei confronti di quei paesi, anche della nostra Unione, in cui l'indipendenza della magistratura e la libertà di informazione, abbiamo visto quanto sia importante la libertà di informazione proprio a proposito dei già citati Panama Papers e Pandora Papers, ecco, la libertà di informazione come la magistratura indipendente sono oggi pesantemente minacciate. E allora solo questo sistema potrà avvalersi di strumenti adeguati per rispondere alla sfida allo Stato di diritto, appunto, che sta portando da alcuni anni la criminalità organizzata transnazionale. Grazie e buonasera a tutti.
Grazie. Now it'll be Konstantinos Karakounis. That's Hellenic Parliament, Greece. Are you there?
Ευχαριστώ πολύ, κύριε Πρόεδρε.
Έκο.
Πάρα πολύ σύντομα. Είναι σημαντικό ότι οι αρμόδιες ελληνικές αρχές συμμετέχουν με ειδικούς εμπειρογνώμονες στα έργα ανάλυσης της Europol, μέσω των οποίων παρέχεται επιχειρησιακή συνδρομή σε έρευνες σοβαρού και οργανωμένου εγκλήματος, τόσο σε ευρωπαϊκό όσο και σε διεθνές επίπεδο, με τις επιχειρησιακές δράσεις όπως τις Option, Shield, Aphrodite, IOS και Silver Axe. Το 2020 διεκπεραιώθηκαν 644 υποθέσεις από καταγγελίες, εισαγγελικές παραγγελίες ή ελέγχους που διενεργήθηκαν από την οικονομική αστυνομία και 659 αιτήματα για παροχή πληροφοριών σε άλλες χώρες. Να εστιάσω σε δύο ζητήματα. Πρώτον, σε ορισμένες περιπτώσεις διαβίβαση αιτημάτων για χορήγηση στοιχείων μέσω Europol προς τις αρχές κρατών μελών της Ευρωπαϊκής Ένωσης, έχει παρατηρηθεί ότι δεν υφίσταται άμεση ανταπόκριση με αποτέλεσμα να μην είναι διαθέσιμα σημαντικά στοιχεία κατά τον κρίσιμο χρόνο των ερευνών. Αυτό είναι κάτι βεβαίως που πρέπει να το εξετάσετε όσον αφορά και την αμεσότητα και τη λειτουργικότητα των πληροφοριών και των στοιχείων. Και ένα έτερο ζήτημα που πρέπει να δείτε είναι να υπάρξει ουσιαστικό πλαίσιο για τη χρήση που να επιτρέπει όχι μόνο την αστυνομική χρήση των πληροφοριών, αλλά και τη δικαστική. Ευχαριστώ πολύ.
Ευχαριστώς. Now it'll be Marietta Caramanli de l'Assemblée Nationale Française. Madame Caramanli, si vous êtes là?
Oui, oui. Est-ce que vous m'entendez? Très bien. Alors, j'arrive pas à lui-même.
Mais on ne voit pas votre face.
Je n'arrive pas à allumer ma caméra.
Alors,
J'appuie dessus, mais je n'arrive
non,
pas.
Non, il n'y aura pas d'interprétation. Alors, je vous propose
je passe
la parole à Maria Marquez du Parlement européen et on va vous réciter, d'accord?
Merci, merci.
Ça sera un instant. Non, it's not Maria Marquez, it's Sergio Marquez. Sergio Marquez de l'Assemblée de la République portugaise. Sergio Marquez.
Muito obrigado, Sra. Presidente. Os próximos exercícios orçamentais da União Europeia vão implicar a maior realização de sempre da despesa pública. A execução do Plano de Recuperação Europeu acarretará este efeito. Neste quadro, o risco de irregularidades, de fraude e corrupção tenderá a aumentar. A proteção dos interesses financeiros da União e o combate a fenómenos de corrupção e fraude assume-se neste contexto como ainda mais relevante e prioritário. Por um lado, descansa-nos o facto de os níveis de fraude e irregularidades na aplicação dos fundos da União Europeia serem baixos, bem como sabermos dos rigorosos critérios estabelecidos para a atribuição dos fundos do Plano de Recuperação. Mas, por outro lado, preocupa-nos a insuficiência de meios ou mesmo a redução dos recursos destinados a assegurar um bom e eficaz funcionamento dos organismos europeus que têm por missão assegurar a proteção dos interesses financeiros da União e o combate à fraude. Na verdade, existe um subfinanciamento crónico de instituições como a OLAF, a Procuradoria Europeia e o Tribunal de Contas Europeu. No caso da OLAF, tem havido mesmo uma redução significativa dos recursos humanos que lhe estão afetos. Receio que a situação da Europol não seja muito diferente. É imperioso dotar estes organismos dos recursos suficientes para cumprirem cabalmente a sua missão. Assim o exige a proteção dos dinheiros dos contribuintes europeus, assim o exige a credibilização e a boa execução do plano de recuperação europeu. Acho que também por aqui passa o combate aos extremismos e aos populismos que em alguns países fazem do combate à corrupção uma das suas bandeiras. Muito obrigado.
Muito obrigado. Madame Karamanlis, ela conseguiu a conectar seu vídeo? Ela conseguiu? On va essayer. Madame Karamanlis, elle était là. Elle était là. N'est pas réussi. Non. Désolé, Madame Karamanlis. Il y a des problèmes techniques. Je suis désolé. On a essayé. Alors, on vous suggère de avancer par écrit la question et ça sera répondu par écrit aussi. Si ça ne vous dérange pas, on est désolé. So I suggest that we move on back to the three panelists in a row. I suggest it'll be 5 minutes each to conclude this round because we still have some way to go to discuss the so-called rules of procedure, which will consume the last track of our working time this afternoon. So back to you. Let's see the same order. Mr. Mull.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving me the floor. Well, first, I would like to point out as a kind of general statement about the uniqueness of Europol's services. We have a very strong mandate to process and analyze data from all forms of serious and organized crime, including terrorism. We have a well-renowned expertise in the analysis of financial but also forensic data, and we have nearly 200 analysts, criminal analysts, and this is a unique capacity in the European Union to swiftly analyze and provide information back to the member states. One of the last speakers mentioned there was a delay in a response. Well, we recently streamlined our intake procedures to speed up our reaction times, so that should be overcome by now. We have a direct contact with the member states via our liaison offices that are located in our house. That is of huge benefit. You literally have to walk across the floor to find your counterpart of another European member state or a liaison officer from a third country to discuss your case. And we have 20 years of strategic expertise and knowledge on combating financial crime. Already when the precursor of Europol was established, the European Drugs Union money laundering was in the portfolio of the organization. So we have a strong experience in that crime area. As mentioned, we established the Specialized Crime Center IFIC last year, but this was just combining the work streams that already were in place for many years. And in the first 6 months of this year, we nearly supported 300 operations Just one case I would like to mention. We supported an operation with our Spanish authorities leading to the seizure of 16.5 million euros in cash plus 1.6 tons of cocaine. So this is quite significant and shows that we already have an impact. We also have a very active cooperation with the private sector. We have a public-private partnership called the EFIP, which brings together actors from the private sector, financial intelligence units, and of course law enforcement agencies, which has proven very successful. Also recently we discussed, for example, cyber currencies, cryptocurrencies, and the threats arising from those. So concretely, the new AML package was mentioned, and I would like to make a brief reference to the establishment of the new anti-money laundering agency. We at Europol believe that it is essential that available financial information is shared at European level to its full extent. We estimate that at least 80% of the suspicious financial transaction reports that are shared by FIUs with law enforcement agencies nationally is unknown to Europol, when more than 90% of the suspicious transaction reports have a cross-border dimension. So bridging the gap between criminal data and financial data at national and EU level would ensure an efficient identification of the threats at stake and of key suspicions of money laundering and terrorist financing. So we welcome clearly the ambitious legislative package, and for the time we see that this package does not foresee a strong cooperation between the new authority and Europol, and we suggest that the new structure should create strong links to bridge existing gaps and also to avoid working in isolation. Additionally, it is essential to avoid duplication of tasks with Europol's mandates set out in the AML authority proposal. Coming to the Pandora Papers, we of course closely follow the latest developments. So far we haven't received any criminal cases in relation to the publication of those papers. We are currently preparing a report analyzing threats that are related to the use of offshore companies, and that will be released very soon and will be available to our stakeholders. And also there were questions on the cooperation between Europol and the EPPO. I would like to confirm, although I mentioned EPPO only twice in my speech, we have established a very good cooperation with EPPO, and this is going very well. We will soon establish a link via the Siena channel to have an operational cooperation. So we also have cases already being referred to Europol. And finally, coming to the size of AFIC, yes, it is true, we currently have 63 staff members. We initiated the center in June last year, and we hope to grow with the new allocation of resources for EFIP. And yes, this is a challenging task, which will not be easy to follow up, but we are confident that we already provide an added value, and we hope to grow in the near future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Milne. Now, over to you, Mr. Babb, European Public Prosecutor's Office.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very briefly, two points to answer to the members of the Parliament. First of all, as regards the means, indeed, there shall be in the coming years an increase of our budget, because we will increase our operational activity. What we would need is to have more analysts, of course, and this will be of paramount importance for the operational work of EPPO. What I want to stress is that we already have, and thanks to Commissioner Reynders, and this has to be stressed, We already have 140 European delegated prosecutors in the 22 member states. So we're very happy with this. We'll make a first assessment and see if we need more EDPs. But for the beginning, this is for us, for EPPO, an excellent start. As regards the cooperation with Europol, I heard a member of the parliament saying that there might be difficulties between EPPO and Europol. This is not the case. On the contrary, we already signed this working arrangement. The only difficulty that we have now is a technical level. We simply have IT issues that have to be solved, and that's all. But we want to cooperate with Europol. We need Europol. We're looking forward to work with Europol because we know the capacities of Europol, and we will use the capacities of Europol, especially in the field of criminal analysis, to support our investigations. So there shall not be any misunderstanding in this field, on this issue. We want to cooperate with Europol. We're looking forward because, once again, we know how efficient Europol can be in the complex investigations. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bab. And over to you, Minister Franson, to conclude this round.
Thank you, Chairman. You may remember that I started my presentation with a quote. I should perhaps have mentioned that the quote came from a staff working document which was annexed to the original Commission proposal for the EPPO, by which I probably mean to say that even the Commission is aware of the criminogenic effect nature of the whole system of subsidies. And my final comment, perhaps, Chair, is why does it matter that we protect the financial interests of the EU? I would say there are a number of reasons. For a start, Article 325 of the Treaty on the Functioning of the European Union obliges the EU and member states to do so. But even more importantly, perhaps, it is a fundamental principle of proper government that national taxpayers' money should be well spent and not end up in the wrong, particularly not in criminal hands, whether at the national or the EU level. Secondly, the EU's very legitimacy, which is already under pressure, unfortunately, is at stake if the EU does not ensure the correct spending of the financial means it has at its disposal. So are its policy objectives and the effectiveness of measures to achieve them. And finally, if organized crime or even corrupt politicians would be able to benefit from the EU funds, that will, by definition, erode many elements of the functioning of our society, many elements that we hold dear. Think of the rule of law that was already mentioned by many of the people who asked questions during the previous round. It will affect the integrity of our democratic system, and the policy aim to stop organized crime from infiltrating our legal order and economies and undermine it using its criminal profits. And this is why effective protection of the financial interests of the EU matter. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Over to you, Mr. Potocan, to conclude this later round of our working sessions throughout these couple of days in the Joint Parliamentary Scrutiny Group on Europol.
Hvala lepa, so predsedujoči, torej spoštovani kolegi, visoki gostje. Iskreno se vsem zahvaljujem za udeležbo, za zanimivo razpravo in seveda za vse prispevke, ki ste jih prispevali na to pomembno temo, s katero seveda se bomo še v bodoče morali ukvarjati. Sedaj pa prehajamo k zadnji točki dnevnega reda, prav tako pomembni, in sicer vprašanje sprememb poslovnika GPSG. In zato predajam besedo kolegu Niku Prebilu. Hvala.
Ja, spoštovana oba sopredsedujoča, spoštovane kolegice in kolegi, s tem prehajamo na naslednjo točko dnevnega reda, in sicer Rules of Procedure. Že včeraj je uvodoma moj kolega sopredsedujoči gospod Lopez Aguilar podrobno predstavil zaključke delovne skupine o odprtih vprašanjih glede možnih sprememb poslovnika JPSG, glede imenovanja predstavnika JPSG v upravnem odboru Europola, to o tem govori člen 5, in pa možnih prihodnih sprememb določb glede spoštovanja načela soglasja, torej člen 6.2. O tem smo vas sopredsedujoči tega 9. srečanja že obvestili v našem pismu, ki datira na dan 20. oktober 2021, s kateri smo vam posredovali finalne kompromisne predloge. V pismu so bili kompromisni predlogi posebej obrazloženi, vse člane JPSG pa smo povabili tudi k sodelovanju in skupni podpori predlaganim rešitvam. Obenem je bila že včeraj predstavljena in povedana odločitev predsedujoče trojke, da na današnjem zasedanju JPSG odločamo o teh dveh kompromisnih predlogih, amandmajih, pravzaprav no, k členu 5 in členu 6.2 za spremembe našega poslovnika. Oba kompromisna predloga sta resnično skupni dosežek dolgotrajnega prizadevanja in pa tudi uspešnega delovanja več kot 15 delegacij JPSG, ki so aktivno sodelovali v delovni skupini, ustanovljena pa je bila v lanskem letu na pobudo trojke, ki so jo sestavljali naši spoštovani kolegi takrat iz finskega, hrvaškega in pa nemškega parlamenta. Delovna skupina si je tako od vsega svojega samega začetka, torej od ustanovitvenega sestanka 10. decembra leta 2020, izjemno prizadevala pripraviti in pa tudi doseči skupno rešitev, z namenom izboljšati besedilo našega sedanjega poslovnika s poudarkom na preomenjenih vprašanjih, ki bi skupini JPSG v prihodnje zagotovila še bolj učinkovito izvrševanje njenih temeljnih nalog, njenih pristojnosti, zaradi katerih je bila pravzaprav ustanovljena. Kot vam je že včeraj kolega López Aguilar pojasnil, naj sam povem še enkrat, da predlog členu 5 predvideva, da bosta dva člana JPSG, eden iz Evropskega parlamenta in eden iz parlamenta predsedujoče države članica, vabljena kot opazovalca na zasedanje upravnega odbora Europola z razumevanjem, da bo le eden od njiju imel pravico govoriti v imenu JPSG. In predlog členu 6.2, ki predvideva, da delegacije JPSG lahko predložijo predloge za spremembe poslovnika vsaj 4 mesece pred naslednjim srečanjem skupine, da predlogi v pisni obliki skupaj z obrazložitvijo se posredujejo sopredsedujočim JPSG in trojki ter pošljajo vsem delegacijam te skupine in da trojka oceni, ali so predlogi dopustni in odloči o njihovi uvrstitvi na dnevni red prvega naslednjega oziroma drugega naslednjega srečanja JPSG po njihovi predložitvi. Kot ste bili seznanjeni s pismom, omenjenim predhodno, današnje plenarno zasedanje JPSG tako predstavlja sklepni del postopka o odprtih vprašanjih poslovnika. V primeru sprejema obeh predlogov s konsenzom danes bodo spremembe v skladu s členom 6.1 našega poslovnika, skladno s katerim bo poslovnik oziroma te spremembe začele veljati z dnem sprejema, torej z današnjim dnem. Dovolite mi, spoštovani, da se na tej točki še enkrat vsem zahvalim za to opravljeno delo na področju sprememb poslovnika, vključno s Portugalsko, ki je predsedovala pred Slovenijo. Besedo pa sedaj za ta naslednji postopek dajem za predsedujočemu kolegu Aguilarju. Izvolite.
Well, thank you, Mr. President, again. Thank you for your presentation and for your support, because I am confident that after all the time that we have consumed, all the time that we have actually spent and put on the discussion on the rules of procedure, it will be coming to an end by consensus, hopefully. I can only hope that it will be adopted by the present compromise amendments, by the word, with no objections, but if there should be any objections, this is the time for the delegations to have their say and be heard. Because I think if we conclude it, then we could actually substantiate the real points that are essential for the kind of scrutiny that we are to exert. Any word on the proposed compromise amendments that we have reached? If there are no objections, they will be deemed to be finally adopted. And that is a major step
That is a small step for man, but a great leap for mankind, I guess. Because we have actually spent hours in these rules of procedures thing. So it's, if it's adopted, that'll be done. And I can only appreciate the work that precedes us, that is finally behind us, so that we can conclude the agenda for our 9th GPSG meeting successfully and proceed to the concluding remarks. If I may have the first say, I just want to thank your active participation in the discussions we've been holding, and it's only obvious that we've been coming across a number of situations and inconveniences and problems, as it is always the case with the hybrid system of communications that we are rehearsing. And thank you for your patience. Thank particularly for the Europol representatives that have stayed all the way. And thanks, of course, the co-chairs, which have been so constructive and have also spent their most valuable time on behalf of Slovenian presidency to carry out the work of these couple of days in cooperation with the members of the European Parliament and the members of the National Parliament's delegation. Thank you. Thank you both, Mr. Preville, Mrs. Potočan. Over to you to conclude.
Najlepša hvala, gospod Aguilar, najprej tudi vam iskrene čestitke za to uspešno usklajevanje in za ta uspešen korak, da smo dokončno uskladili predloge sprememb poslovnika in jih seveda danes tudi s konsenzom potrdili, tako da čestitke tudi strani slovenskega predsedstva in hvala Evropskemu parlamentu za podporo. Spoštovana oba, še enkrat so predsedujoče in kolegice in kolegi, v svojem osebnem imenu in tudi v imenu slovenskega predsedstva se vam zahvaljujem tudi vsem sodelujočim seveda za ustrezne prispevke, za izvedbo tega srečanja, žal še vedno preko videokonference, a vsekakor zanimive in konstruktivne razprave. Res sem vesel, da nam je uspelo pripraviti nekako prostor odprtega dialoga v okviru srečanj skupine IPSG in nenazadnje dobrega sodelovanja z Europolom, česar se seveda nadejam tudi v prihodnosti. Izredno vesel sem in mislim, da to delim z vsemi pristojnimi, prisotnimi kolegicami in kolegi, da nam je po več letnem prizadevanju in dobrem skupnem sodelovanju uspelo sprejeti še enkrat to revizijo poslovnika IPSG, ki bo po mojem trdnem prepričanju prineslo in tudi zagotovilo še bolj učinkovito izvrševanje njenih nalog in pristojnosti, zaradi katerih je bila sploh ta skupina ustanovljena in izredno pomembno je, da je tudi bila in da tudi deluje. Tudi vam, gospod Aguilar, še enkrat hvala, gospa Potočan, tudi vam in seveda Evropskemu parlamentu in celotnemu državnemu svetu za vso podporo in pomoč pri izvedbi tega srečanja. Sam sem vesel, da tudi v teh izjemnih okoliščinah, ki jih imamo, ne nazadnje vseeno, kljub manjšim tehničnim težavam, še vedno ta srečanja uspevajo in seveda delujejo kontinuirano naprej. Tako da, dame in gospodje, jaz vam želim srečno še naprej in resnično upam, da se prihodnič lahko srečamo v živo in si stežemo tudi v roke. Hvala lepa z moje strani, besedo pa sedaj predajam še kolegici iz državnega sveta, so predsedujoči gospe Bojani Potočan. Hvala.
Hvala lepa za besedo. Najprej seveda lepa hvala obema so predsedujočima, tako gospodu Aguilaru, kot mojemu kolegu Prebilu, pa seveda vsem kolegicam in kolegom, vsem sodelujočim, vsem govorcem in seveda vsem službam, ki so omogočile dobro izvedbo tega srečanja, tako tudi vsem tehničnim službam, da lahko v teh razmerah, kakršnih smo se znašli zaradi epidemije COVID, se srečamo takole nadaljavo. Skratka, vsem se zahvaljujem za to prisotnost na 9. srečanju skupine za skupni parlamentarni nadzor Europola in tudi za vaš doprinos k izjemno dinamični razpravi. Imeli smo privilegij prisluhniti predstavitvi bistvenih elementov Europolovega večletnega programskega načrta in poročilu Evropskega nadzornika za varstvo podatkov. Izmenjali smo si podatke s komisarko za notranje zadeve in slovenskim ministrom za notranje zadeve. Izjemno me veseli, da smo tudi pri spremembah poslovnika dosegli napredek, tako da iskrena hvala prav vsem, ki ste sodelovali pri pripravi teh sprememb in seveda kolegom za konstruktivnost, da ste takšne spremembe tudi soglasno sprejeli. Veliko zadovoljstvo mi je, da smo v okviru tokratnega srečanja imeli tudi priložnost odpreti in voditi dve izjemno relevantni vsebinski razpravi. Teme, kot so kibernetska kriminaliteta, s poudarkom na zlorabah otrok, morajo vedno ostati v ospredju. Treba si aktivno prizadevati za povečanje ozaveščenosti o varnosti na spletu, s čimer je treba začeti že v zgodnji dobi odraščanja. Mlajši so izjemno dovzetni in vodljivi, tako da jih bo treba poučiti in usmerjati k varni uporabi spleta. Vsi se zavedamo, da so varnostni mehanizmi, ki jih nudijo multinacionalna družabna omrežja, pomankljivi. Dostop, prijava in objavljanje vsebin v teh omrežjih je preprosta, pri čemer pa zlasti mlajši uporabniki niso ne dovolj poučeni o posledicah posameznih objav in tudi ne dovolj zaščiteni pred zlorabami. To je treba v bodoče spremeniti in na tem področju tudi aktivno delovati. Naj se za konec vrnem še k temi finančnega kriminala in korupcije. Za učinkovit pregon ne zadošča zgolj delovanje nacionalnih organov, saj njihova pooblastila ne segajo prek nacionalnih meja. Tako je v boju proti finančnemu kriminalu in korupciji ključno medinstitucionalno sodelovanje ne le na nacionalni, temveč seveda tudi na mednarodni in evropski ravni. Edini konstruktivni odgovor za finančni kriminal je izmenjava finančnih informacij in finančnih analiz, s katerimi razpolagajo finančne obveščevalne enote. Informacije so tisto, kar potrebujemo, če hočemo bolje razumeti naravo nevarnosti, vse točke ranljivosti in posledično možne priložnosti, da lahko ukrepimo, če je potrebno, nadzor. Le na takšen način se lahko oblikuje enoten odziv na finančni kriminal. Pri tem predstavljata izziv raznovrstna zakonodaja in navsezadnje zagotavljanje konsistentnosti. Naj na tem mestu zaključim. Še enkrat hvala mojima sopredsedujočima in še enkrat hvala vsem sodelujočim na današnjem srečanju. Želim vam vse dobro in upam, da se ponovno srečamo in tako kot je že rekel kolega Nik Prebil, tokrat v živo. Bodite zdravi, srečno, nasvidenje.
Again, Mr. Prebil, Mrs. Potajan, thank you so much for the cooperation and for the patience. Let me just announce that our next meeting will be taking place under the French presidency, which will be the one following the Slovenian presidency, planned to the end of February or maybe the start of March 2022. We will confirm the exact dates as fast and as soon as we can. Because it'll be in Paris, I understand, it'll be in Paris. But the exact dates are yet to be agreed. Okay, so thank you all, that'll be all. Bye now.
Precisa retirar seus fones, senão levará tudo.